Should we start?
Yeah.
Okay. Hey folks, good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome. Going to be a little bit informal. Actually, Baruch Hashem, recovering from foot surgery. Actually, this is the first time that I'm speaking before without my boot on my leg. I noticed when I spoke then, people actually stayed up and listened because they had Rachmanis on me, you know. This poor guy, you know. At least I could do is stay up, you know. So I'm counting on you. Okay, the topic is the message of tzitzis and why it's a man's mitzvah. I just want to make clear that the tone of this shiur is not why doesn't a woman wear a talis, but rather why doesn't a woman wear a talis? The two are very, very different. Now we know that there are certain mitzvos that women are not obligated to do, what we call zman grama, time-bound mitzvos. And first of all, I think it's important to mention that the message is relevant to men and to women. Men, for various reasons, men were given the mitzvah to do something, what we call a ritual, to express or concretize this idea. Women were not given that, but the message is relevant to them as well. And something unique about tzitzis, about the talis, is that typically speaking, women go to great length to do the mitzvahs that they're not obligated to do. Almost every observant woman hears the shofar on Rosh Hashanah, they're not obligated to do it, they do it. Sukkah, women will generally try their best to sit in the sukkah. The two exceptions seem to be tzitzis and tefillin. So tefillin is a different discussion, and there are some more obvious reasons, perhaps, why. But it's not really that obvious. What is it about the talis with tzitzis why shofar yes, sukkah yes, and for some reason it's historically women don't wear the talis. So I want to share some ideas with you, beginning with the message of tzitzis, and hopefully at the end suggest a Moshe Katz understanding as to why that's the case. We have some sheets here. That's not designed to be textual per se, but thank you. We have some source sheets. Now we do know, by the way, that even though women don't wear a talis, there is a time where, at least according to the minhag, the common practice, the custom is that a woman does have some interaction with a talis. Anyone know what that is? For some it's the chuppah, right? For Yekis, German Jews or Sephardic Jews, right? So that's an interesting thing. And also, typically, the custom is who buys the talis? Right, the kala buys the talis for her husband. So it's interesting that they don't wear the talis, but we see two times where the custom is that they're involved in the talis. Okay, the Torah is very clear about what the purpose or the goal of tzitzis or a talis is. It's the first paragraph. I apologize, this is from the original Hirsch Chumash, but still has the archaic English. The new edition is much normal. More normal. It shall be upon you for fringes. You may look upon them and remember all the commandments of Hashem and fulfill them. And you shall not seek after your hearts and your eyes, going which after which you have become unfaithful to me. Wear these tzitzis so that you should remember the mitzvahs and don't go after your hearts and your eyes. It's very clear, more clear than many other mitzvahs. It's very clear what the purpose or the goal of tzitzis is. What's not so clear is what's the connection. How is tzitzis supposed to do that? Now you could say, well, you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu took something at random. You could have said, put a pink ribbon on your refrigerator so you remember the mitzvahs, but I think I'm certainly not get satisfied with that. I don't think we should be satisfied with that. We would look for some inherent, intrinsic connection between the tzitzis and reminding us of the mitzvahs, and it's not all that clear. So a lot of what I'm saying is based on Rav Hirsch and some other Mefarshim and some Moshe Katz. You probably noticed which is the Moshe Katz. Rav Hirsch begins the discussion by suggesting that just like there are mitzvos which dedicate something to its purpose, for example, a mezuzah dedicates the home to its purpose as a Jewish home, a place for the Shekhinah. Let's say tefillin on the arm. We can see that dedicates the actions, heart or the actions. On the head dedicates the intellect, the mind, to service of Hashem. Right? So we have mitzvahs that dedicate something to its purpose. So our first says, therefore, it's reasonable to think that tzitzis are to dedicate clothing to its purpose. We don't usually think very philosophically about our clothing. I think most of us are in the semi-comatose state when we put on our clothing. We're not so philosophical, right? But we do. There was an earlier shiur, I think, about clothing. I don't know if anyone was here. I don't know if it'll be repeated or not. I don't know. But so the idea is that it's to dedicate clothing to its purpose. Now, how do we know that clothing has a philosophical or ethical or hashkafic spiritual purpose? Maybe this clothing is just to protect us from the elements. How do we know the spiritual meaning to clothing? How do we know that? Anybody know? The first pair of clothing came from Hashem. Right? We read originally, Adam and Chava wore no clothing. They were not ashamed, or literally more, they were not to be ashamed. There's no reason to be ashamed. They were not ashamed, right? After they sinned, they covered themselves. They had a sense now that they should be covered, and Hashem gave them clothing. So it can't be more clear that the spiritual purpose to clothing, because Hashem himself gave them the clothing, right? So they sinned. Originally, they wore no clothing. They sinned. As a response to the sin, they were given clothing. Right now, let's take a look at the second paragraph is Vayas Hashem Elokim LaAdam UlaIshto. Hashem God made for Adam and his wife kosnos or coats of skins VeYalbishem, and he clothed them. By the way, I think Rav Hirsch and others point out that this, he could have just you sinned, here's clothing, right? So he clothed them. It's a certain image, I think, sort of like of a mother lovingly dressing their child, even though they sinned. HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't say, here, you distance from me, put on these clothing. He clothed them with a certain show of love. So he gave them clothing as a result of the sin. Now, when the Torah describes the sin itself, that's the next paragraph. Bateri ha'isha, the woman saw ki tov ha'etz l'ma'achol, the tree was good for food. Chisava hu le'inayim, and it was tempting to the sight. Benechmod ha'etz l'haskil, appealing to the understanding. Batikach mipirio, she took it and she ate, and she also gave her husband to eat. Right, so she saw that it looked appealing, and she ate. And the result of that, the response was clothing. Right? Does anyone see, anyone struck by, if you look at the first paragraph and the third paragraph, you see anything that strikes you? Something common between the two paragraphs?
Sight.
Right? Sight, right? Don't go after your hearts and your eyes. Right here, they saw, and it looked appealing to the sight and to the understanding. So Rav Hirsch points out that these paragraphs are almost identical. If you wanted to say, what did Adam and Chava do? They went after their hearts and their eyes. Hashem said, you see that tree? It may look appealing to you. It's not good for you. And they went after their hearts and their eyes. Not what Hashem told them. And in response, Hashem gave them clothing. If you want to paraphrase, if clothing could speak, what is the message? Don't go after your hearts and your eyes. It's a very striking parallel. So again, Hashem tells them, this looks good to you, but it's not. And they went after their hearts and their eyes, and they ate it. Then comes clothing. Now, there are creatures that are meant to do exactly that, to go to follow their hearts and their eyes. Who are those creatures? Animals, right? Animals, every creature really, in a certain sense, is programmed, right? So animals are programmed. Animals are programmed. Whatever they're supposed to eat is appealing to them. What they're not supposed to eat is not appealing. No big moral judgments. If you give a dog a bowl of dog food, it doesn't say, maybe I should give some of this to a less fortunate dog. That doesn't take, despite what might say these days, we assume it doesn't take place. So the animals are designed to do exactly that. To go after their hearts and their eyes. Whatever they're supposed to do, they're programmed that it's attractive to them. Right? The exception to the rule, human beings. With human beings, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did was, instead of programming us to do what we should do, right, he told us. So he made things that we should not do attractive to us, or things that we should do not attractive to us at times, and said, don't go after your hearts and your eyes, go after what I tell you to do. That's what's unique about human beings. What we call bechira, free will to do, and that's the greatness of a human being, is the fact that we have free choice to choose to do the right thing. You know, I always tell people, you know, you see an old lady carrying packages in the street, so don't have to be a PhD in Judaism to know that the Torah wants you to help the woman with her packages, right? But we're not programmed to automatically run over and help her. We're capable of hakana chayinik, like we would say. We come up with all kinds of reasons why we don't have to do it. I'm in a rush. I'm going to do a mitzvah. I'm going to shul. If we're really Talmudic, we can say she would feel better if we don't help her because she wants to feel independent. And sometimes that's actually true. But we can come up with all types of rationalizations why we shouldn't do it, right? Would the world be better off if we were made to automatically go help her without any discussion, right? So would the world be better? In a way, it would be better. Right. It would be better in a certain way because all old ladies would have help with their packages. But the helpers would be robots, right? So there would be no meaning to the act of chesed, the act of kindness, right? So animals are programmed to go after the hearts and their eyes. We are told, don't follow your hearts and your eyes, follow what Hashem tells us is good or not. That should be the barometer for what's good. And Adam and Chava went after their hearts and their eyes. Right. So in essence, what they did was, in this particular experience, they looked at the world through the eyes of an animal. Right? They followed their hearts and their eyes. So what does Hashem do? He says, you need clothing. Right? What does clothing do? This must be really important, this part. What does clothing do? Clothing takes our body, which is virtually identical to an animal, and it covers the animal part of us, right? The idea being, among other ideas, that the animal part of us should be in the background. Not destroyed, not blotted out, but veiled in the background. And Rav Hirsch discusses in another place that if we think about it, when a person is clothed properly, their body is covered with the exception of what's not covered? The face, among us, the face and...
The hand with the opposing thumb.
Sorry?
The hand with the opposing thumb, which allows us to do things that animals, except apes, can't do.
Okay, very good. So generally speaking, the head gets involved in mitzvahs, but in terms of clothing, the face is uncovered and the hands are uncovered. Rav Hirsch points out that those are two uniquely human aspects of us, right? The face, the human personality shines out through the face. Rav Hutna, my Rebbe, and others have pointed out the word panim, which is face, is like pinim, which is inside. Right? You get a glimpse through the inside of a person through their face. I once saw a cartoon, this couple traveling in a car together with sourpusses on their face, and the wife says to the husband, I know exactly what you're saying when you sit there without saying anything. You know what's going on inside by looking at the person's face. So the face is uniquely human, and the hands, like you said, we do uniquely human activities with our hands. With hands, we shape things, we write things, we create tools. So we do uniquely human things with our hands. So clothing, we cover the animal part of us. It should be in the background. Reminder that we're not animals. And the human part is what shines forth. And that's what we focus on. So the response to Adam and Chava relating to the world as animals, going after their hearts and their eyes, the response wasn't that you need clothing to cover the animal part of you and let the human part of you shine forth. So it's a constant reminder to us that although our bodies are identical virtually with the animal, we are not animals, we have a higher calling. So that's step number one. And as we said, if you wanted to paraphrase the message of clothing, you would say, don't go after your hearts and your eyes, which is what the Torah says when we're talking about tzitzis. Right? Okay? Part one. By the way, the Hebrew word, one of the Hebrew words for clothing is beged. Does anyone know what we say in Hebrew when somebody betrays somebody, a traitor? Bagad. Beged, bagad, same word, virtually the same word. Right? Rav Hirsch expresses it by saying that when you see somebody with clothing, you have a right to relate to them as a human being, and you can trust them. When a person betrays the trust, They're just an empty garment. It's a facade. You dress like a human being, but you're not. So you're just an empty garment. I once later with somebody who was a trader, and he was describing to me what they call the pit, where sometimes people are not as conscious of the needs of the other person as they should be, and he described the whole, use the words dog eat dog, and then he told me that he wanted to invite me to come to see the pit. But he told me, you need to know that there's a dress code. You have to wear a tie. So I said, that's beggar and bogad. You could rip the other guy to shreds, but make sure you're wearing a tie. No, not to say that all traders are like that. But, okay, so that's part one. So as Refersh said, we start off with the meaning of clothing, right? And the second step might be that that tzitzis are meant to dedicate the clothing to its purpose. Okay, so next stage is the tzitzis itself. Who knows, anyone here know what parsha in the Torah is the mitzvah of tzitzis? Don't worry, among men, unless it's about Kori in the room, they don't. A little earlier, it's in Bamidbar, Shlach. Shlach. As I said, unless it's about Kori in the room, but generally you get the steers. Someplace in Bereishis most week, the Bamidbar Torah. So it's in the Shlach, right? This is a little bit more obvious. What is the major theme of the parsha of Shlach, which means send men? Meraglim. Right, so the main theme of that parsha is Shlach. And after the Meraglim, there are a few mitzvos, right? And various Mevarshim commentaries explain and assume that we have a right to assume there's a connection, that those mitzvos somewhere are in response. Chal is one of them, and tzitzis is one of them, right? So, again, this is something that the Refersh points out, which I think is very striking. If we think about, again, Adam and Chava, what do? Hashem said, that thing looks good, but it's not. They went after their hearts and their eyes and decided that it's good and went for it. Anyone see a parallel with the Meraglim? Eretz Yisrael? What were they told about Eretz Yisrael and what was their response? Right, so they were told the land is good, right? And they looked at with their hearts and their eyes, the spies, and they said, no, we can't do it, it's not good. So it's exactly the same, just in reverse. It's very striking, right? The exact same problem in reverse, right? Hashem said the land is good, they looked at it, no, it doesn't look good, and therefore they said we can't go. Exact same thing in the opposite. Again, look to the world not as a human being is supposed to do, and certainly not as a Jew is supposed to. They use other barometers other than what Hashem told them. They use their hearts and their eyes. Right. What's the response? The response to that is tzitzis. Right. To reinforce the message of clothing. Because obviously they didn't get it. Right. The whole message of clothing is don't look at the world like an animal. Don't follow your hearts and your eyes. Follow what Hashem says is good or not good. And the Meraglim did the same exact thing in reverse. So we're given the mitzvah of tzitzis. Right? And tzitzis are, the word tzitzis, tzitz, which has different meanings. It means just a fringe. It also means to blossom. Right? So first says that the purpose of tzitzis is to get our clothing to blossom, to be fruitful, to achieve its purpose. There's a very beautiful paragraph here. I'm sorry, I don't have the English here, but it's short. The first Hebrew paragraph on the bottom is from Rav Dessler, and he's actually paraphrasing Rav Hirsch. It says, "Habagodim shanasan Hashem yizbarach l'adam harishon, the clothing that Hashem gave to Adam, v'shalovshim kol banav achrav, and that the clothing that all the descendants of Adam, means all human beings, wear, heimechabdim es Adam, they give honor to the person, umaskirim lo, and they remind the person, shalipol shuv b'chet, not to fall, once again, to stumble into sin." So all human beings have that element of clothing. La'am Yisrael, to the Jewish people, Hosef Hashem added tzitzis al kanfei bigdeim. He added tzitzis on the corner of their garments. Miloshen v'yotzei tzitz, to blossom. L'rameis, to hint, she'etzlam, that with them, habagodim tzrichim litzmoach l'hotzi tzitz. Their clothing needs to grow and to blossom. Laskiram, to remind them, Yehudam HaGodol, their great mission, Leos Mamlechas Kohanim, Begoy Kadosh, to be a priestly nation and a holy nation. Right, so all human beings wear clothing, and on top of that, we were given the mitzvah of tzitzis to emphasize the meaning of clothing, and that the clothing should blossom and bear fruit and achieve its purpose. Right, so that was a response to the chait of the miracle. Right, so to backtrack, to summarize till now, Adam and Chava were given a mitzvah, and they were told this tree may look, this fruit may look good, but it's not. They went after their hearts and their eyes and ate it. They were given clothing. Then Viraglim, the Jewish people, were told this land is good. They went after their hearts and their eyes. They decided it's not good. They were given tzitzis on top of their clothing. By the way, who were the two spies that were faithful? Yeshua, Khalid. What did they do when the spies came back with the bad report? We told them the Torah that they said no, it's good, and they ripped their clothing. It's interesting. So simply it's understood as a sign of mourning, but on a deeper level, it's an expression that we don't get the message of clothing. I actually once heard from Rav David Cohen, a very big Talmid Chacham in New York, again a deeper insight into the practice of Kriya for mourning. On one level, it's expression of grief and mourning. Another, he said, it's an expression of the hope that someday the world will go back to its perfect state. There'll be no death and no need for clothing. The pristine, pristine world. Right. So we were given clothing to reinforce the message. I'm sorry, we were given tzitzis to reinforce the message of clothing. Okay, now's the question. Let's see if anybody is awake here. Does anyone see where I'm heading here? To see whether we can see why it may be that tzitzis talis has remained a men's mitzvah, a guy's thing.
Women like clothing more.
Both true. Both profound, actually. They're both true. Actually, when issues come up with men and women, different roles, etc., and individuality is not individuality, I once saw what I thought was a very nice metaphor for that, which my wife doesn't like so much. But the idea was that that men are given conforming role, and their individuality is sort of the background. So, like in the army and the marines, and women express their individuality. So, this person, so actually, Moshe Soloveitchik, he says, if a couple goes to a dinner or a wedding, say, "We're coming to the dinner." The guy's wearing his black suit, his navy suit, whatever it is. Like, the wife walks into the room. What's the worst thing that she could possibly see?
Someone
right. Oh, night's over. You got to run home. This thing. No, 400 guys are happy wearing their dark suits and whatever yarmulke or hats, whatever it is. They're all the same, and the woman has to be unique. In any case, so they're both true, right? But so when we say that Hashem said this land is good, and the Jewish people said it's not good, that's not accurate. Right, because Chazal tells very clearly, if anyone wants the address, Rashi in last week's parasha, actually, in Bamidbar 26:64, Chavav Samach Dalid, Rashi says there, because it says there that there were no one left from that generation, they all perished, and Rashi says, because it says the word Anoshim, Rashi says that, and this is Chazal in quite a few places, that because the women did not participate in the sin of the spies, right? It's the same thing with the golden calf, the eagle, the guys, they're always messing up. So Rashi says, the guys said, let's go back to Mitzrayim, and the women were saying, give us a share like the daughters of Tzelefchad, right? Yeah. I once gave this similar share to a group of post-seminary girls, and they all were not aware of this, and I felt it was kind of tragic, really, really tragic. So it's important. So it's Chazal say in many places. It's very clear in Chazal that our tradition is that the women do not participate in the sin of the spies. Right. So here comes Moshe Katz, and to me it seems very, very reasonable to say that so it starts off Chava sinned. She actually got her husband involved, right? And actually, there's a medrash that says that it's interesting because throughout I would stay in the midbar in the desert. Every time it was the guys messing up and the women saying, let's go, right? And here with Chava, it was the reverse. She's the one that that's sort of messed up. So the Medrash says, it's on Kosom al Beis Yaakov, that Har Sinai, Hashem told Moshe, Kosom al Beis Yaakov, speak to the house of Jacob, meaning I speak to the women first. And Medrash says that by Chaba, she heard it indirectly. Hashem spoke to Adam, told Adam not to eat from that fruit. He told it to Chava, and she failed. So the Medrash says, tell it straight to them, and you'll be able to count on them. Right? So it turns out that so they're given clothing, right, to remind themselves that they're not supposed to go after the hearts and their eyes, right? Then it comes to the Meraglim. So the scene as painted by Rashi is the men say, let's go back to Egypt, and women say, you guys are crazy, let's go to Eretz Yisrael. So when we say that they lost touch with the message of clothing, it's the men that lost touch with the message. Women did not. So the men were given this added mitzvah to emphasize the message of clothing, right? And it was literally a guy's thing. So I don't have a video camera, but I could well see that that women were told, like all other mitzvahs, this is not a mitzvah for you. If you want to do it, you can do it. And I suggest that women proudly said, this is not for us. It's fine. You know, we got clothing, we got the message, we remain strong. The guys need this mitzvah. Fine. So what we do find that, as I mentioned before, under a chuppah, the couple is reminded as a couple, remember this message, right? And when the kala gives her chassan a talis, she says, listen, this is not my mitzvah. Your mitzvah. My job is to give it to you, and sometimes to prod you, you know, lovingly, to remain faithful to that message. But it's really not. It's really a guy's mitzvah. You know, sometimes people say this mitzvah is a guy's thing. Well, that's only because guys do it. So, but you know, here I think that inherently we could really see that on a certain level, the message of tzitzis was clearly directed to the men, and not necessary for the women. We actually find a similar thing in the realm of minhag. When it comes to Yom Kippur, it says that it says in Shulchan Aruch that there's a certain type, something that we should not wear on Yom Kippur, because we don't want to bring up the memory of the egel, the golden calf. What is that? We're told not to wear gold jewelry on Yom Kippur. Rabbi Kiv Egan, one of the great commentaries, has a little footnote there, and he says this does not apply to women. Why? Because we don't want to evoke the Egel. That's a guy, also a guy's thing, because women do not participate in the Egel. So I used to tell my wife, proudly wear your gold jewelry. She said, I don't have any gold jewelry, maybe buy me some. that's a separate thing. But you see the similar thing where it makes a difference. The fact that this downfall was, I think, that the guys did and the men did, not the women, reflects itself in this meaning that men need to lay low on the gold and women do not. So that is my suggestion for that. And I said, you know, as I said, the purpose of this year is not to answer a, you know, challenge, but it's to answer the question. I think, and even perhaps more importantly than the particular suggestion about the tzitzis, I think it should just give us a sense, which we all probably know, that of the depth that could be. You know, we say why this, why that, and the depth that could be behind things that we sometimes don't realize. I once heard of Yaakov Kamenetsky, Zichron Baruch, giving a shir, and he mentioned that the pasuk in Mishlei says Shema Bnei Musar Avicha, Val Titosh Toras Imecha. Don't leave the Torah of your mother. So the Medrash says, what's Toras Imecha? What's the Torah of your mother? And the Medrash says that's minhag, custom. So Yaakov asks, "What's the why? Would we express minhag as the Torah of your mother?" So he said something I thought very beautiful. He says that if you have a bunch of people in a room and a baby starts crying, everyone tries to console the baby, and no progress. Somebody walks into the room, looks at the baby, and takes the baby and quiet smile. Who's that person likely to be? The mother. Right? It's because he says because the mother has an intuitive sense of what the child needs. So he said the collective body of the Klal Yisrael, we call Knesset Yisrael, the Jewish people, have a collective intuition and a sense of what minhagim we need to have and what we don't have to have. And sometimes the rational explanation for a minhag is not so compelling, but it comes from the collective heart of the Jewish people. So historically, something like this, where that tzitzit has always been a man's thing, that's a reflection of this collective sense of the Jewish people. On the bottom here, we have again, as I said, every time there's a mitzvah, whether women do it or not, or for that matter, a mitzvah that for a kohen and a non-kohen doesn't do it, the message is always relevant for all of us. The bottom paragraph is from the Ava Rava right before Shema, right? And basically we ask Hashem to take us from all four corners of the earth and bring us back to Eretz Yisrael. So if you look at the side in English, at this point, gather the four tzitzis between the fourth and fifth fingers of the left hand and hold the tzitzis of Shema. Right? And this is our scroll, so it's authoritative. Right? So the custom is that obviously men, when they say this, they take the tzitzis into their hands. Right? So again, it's generally assumed that it's because it's reference to the four corners of the earth, you take tzitzis from the four corners of the earth, and that could very well be. Right? But again, in context of all this, we could suggest that there's, again, a more inherent connection. Right? Because we could piously say, lead us back to the land of Eretz Yisrael, you know. And we only have a right to do that if we internalize the message and the failure of the Meraglim. Right? So before such a request, we take the talus into our hands, remind ourselves, don't even have the chutzpah to say this request unless you, in some way, try to rectify what the Meraglim did. I once heard a story that somebody went to Eretz Yisrael and he went to visit Rav Kook. That's all. So the Shmuzni, Rav Kook said, how do you like Eretz Yisrael? He said, this problem, that problem, this problem, that problem, Jews, this, Jews, non-Jews, fighting, man, all the problems. So Rav Kook said to him, how long are you in Eretz Yisrael? She said, 2 weeks. She said to him, the Meraglim waited 40 days at least before they criticized Eretz Yisrael. You're here 2 weeks already and everything is no good. You know, so it's, you know, a thousand of years later, but we have to internalize the message of tzitzis in order for us to have the right to suggest that to make that request. So just to sum up again, because I hope people come out with something. So we have the idea that the response to the first sin was clothing, reminded that we should not go after our hearts and our eyes. We should cover the animal parts of our body, and that was clothing. And then we come to Meraglim, it's the same exact thing in reverse. Hashem said the land is good, and they decided it's not good, went after the hearts and their eyes, were given tzitzis to concretize and to reinforce the message of clothing. It was something that the men needed, the women did not need, so it remains perhaps a mitzvah for men. And so as I said, we don't think so philosophically about our clothing, but clearly there's a lot behind our clothing. So whether it's when we get dressed or at some other time, we should really give thought to the idea of clothing and what it represents, and whether we're wearing tzitzis or not. The idea of the tzitzis, it's clothing is something that, like you said, some of us enjoy more than others shopping for clothing, perhaps. But right, and that's fine. But ultimately, we have to remember that there's a message to clothing, right? Of course, this is related to the concept of tzniyus in general. I always tell people some things that used to work don't work as well because people are more distanced. But used to be people say, you know, these modesty in dress, you know, it sounds so bizarre, so Puritan-like, you know. So I say to people, if you go to the Western Wall, do you understand at the Western Wall that a certain dress is not appropriate? Most people, even today, most people, yeah, it makes sense, right? So I explain that our message is that it's not just the coastal that's sacred ground. Wherever we are should be sacred ground. I tell people, you're at the coast, and then you see somebody, an old friend of yours you haven't seen for years, coming and going, oh, do I have this juicy piece of gossip? That's an old classmate, right? And then most people, if they think, they'll say, not here. At the Western Wall, I'm not going to speak to Lashon Hara, right? On Michigan Avenue, you meet a friend, that's very different, right? What the message is that Michigan Avenue is has the potential to have the Kedusha of the Kosel. Okay, so finally we have Avinu Shalom, it's actually the three period, like, you know, on a certain level, I think American Jews, we always grapple with the fact that we say that we're here, and in theory we could go to Eretz Yisrael. We say these things like, you know, I think this could be a reminder to us that we have to, right up there with just thinking seriously about whether we should or could be in Eretz Yisrael, is to make sure that we rectify the source of our losing of Eretz Yisrael, and reflect on the Meraglim and how we should try to address those shortcomings, and to use the lenses of the Torah as opposed to our own senses. You know, we don't need me to tell you that we're bombarded with all types of moral issues these days, and we need to have a sense of clarity of vision and confidence in our position. I know somebody who, certain personality, who's very successful in Kiruv and producing many, many Baalei Tshuva, and he raised his students so that if someone says to you, "You keep kosher," he said, "You should say, yeah, you don't." Whether one should say that or not, but the idea was that we should not feel apologetic. You know, we should feel that we the Ashrein Matov Chalkein, that we have the lenses of the Torah to which to look at things and to get a clear perspective. I can't resist. Well, I just can't resist telling you a story since we're another minute. A cute story that someone sent me a list of these adorable things when a teacher asks a question and kids come from left field with this, you know, cute, adorable things. You know, so good material. So someone sent me one about a little bit about clothing. It was a summer camp. Took the kids to a firehouse to see the fire engines and meet the firemen. So for the older kids, they had a talk with one of the firemen to teach them about fire safety. And one of the things he told them that if the clothing is on fire, God forbid, they should roll on the floor to put out the fire. So that was an important message he wanted to hammer home to the kids. So at the end, he said, "Okay, let's review. Who remembers? What should you do if your clothing are on fire?" So one kid says, "Wear different clothing." Hopefully that year won't have the fate of that that message, but thank you very much for listening, and hopefully we come home with something.